What up, what up? Can you hear me?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Medford, Somerville. This is 91.5 WMFO. You're listening to Subjectively Objective with Stephen Honig.
And Pierce Devlin. And this is for Medford Tufts Freeform Radio.
All right, we're going to start you guys off with a little PSA. Just get this out of the way. So, sorry. I didn't mean to diss the PSAs like that. Numbers to think about: worldwide prison populations. This is an interesting one. The United States has the world's largest documented prison population, both in absolute and proportional terms. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, more than 2.2 million prisoners are behind bars in the United States, a rate of 730 per 100,000 people. That's a lot. China, which is four times more populous than the U.S., is a distant second with 1.51 million people in prison, a rate of 117 per 100,000. While Russia is the second highest rate, 606 per 100,000. That makes sense. For a total of 865,000 prisoners. The numbers to think about: a message in the public interest from WMFO and Medford Tufts Educational Radio.
Well, you'd know that anyway if you followed Bernie's page on Facebook or anything. Talks about
truth.
Incarceration rates all the time.
Truth. Actually, the fact that good segue into what I wanted to talk about. So I've been promising politics the past, what, like two, three weeks.
Yep.
We're going to give it to you guys now because we actually got sort of good sleep and had a sort of not unbearable week. So I'm ready when you are. You good?
Yeah.
You good?
Let's do this.
First things first. Okay, so I wasn't going to start with this, but I am now because it made me upset. I don't know if you know, and I'm surprised it wasn't blown up as much, but Donald Trump called 9/11 7/11. And the reason why I bring that up as a serious thing to discuss, is because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you made a blunder. He referred to it as 7/11. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons why this for me is the most, I know this sounds bizarre, but policy aside, is the most convincing thing for why I personally think it's a bad path were he to be the president of the United States of America, is because he took a day that changed the history of international relations and the new order of American politics and you know, this kind of stalemate where we weren't fighting a big war and now became the war on terrorism after a gap when, you know, Cold War was over, we kind of didn't know what to do, our foreign policy was in slight decline. And he took a day, you know, that's forever in the history books, that started its own global war, and he, like, appropriated it. Like, with one thing, he showed us that it didn't matter, and he did.
Yeah. The gravity of the situation could be that high had it been an intentional thing. I know what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
but it could have easily... Yeah, I understand. I completely reconcile with what you're saying. But it could have just been an easy blunder, you know? I mean, with all that aside, like, it could have just been... I know, but that's... It is a little ridiculous for him to say something like that. It's kind of weird.
I think it is a blunder... But the point I'm trying to make is that, like, that no longer is a blunder. That's one of those things. I mean, like, but even the tone he used to speak about it.
Yeah, and, like, the context, it was kind of pretentious anyway.
I have bias. Obviously, I'm from New York, for those of you who don't know, which would be everyone listening. I'm from New York City. And though I was young, it's just a sensitive thing to talk about. But I just don't, like, there's something about the way he appropriated it. And for those of you, and I know I know because I have relatives who support Donald Trump. The biggest argument is, he represents the United States values, and he's going to bring back an epoch of American economic strength and hegemony all over again, like it was in the Cold War, but where it was a constant struggle to be the top. And I think to make this mistake kind of nulls all of that. I mean, like, because that's the most American day, that's the day that, because of a horrible, sad travesty, and I say travesty, not tragedy, because I do think, we could have taken steps. He takes his values and he cuts him. He cuts him. The whole, America, it's nulled by the fact that he referred to the biggest day in our country's history as 7/11. So I don't know. For me, I can sit here and make arguments against his foreign policy, but I don't have to. I think he does himself. I think he eats himself on that one. Sure. I just wanted to point this one out.
I do have a question for you now that this has happened, this ridiculous thing. And political parties aside, I think everyone takes pride in what happened that day. Do you think this is going to affect his campaign?
No.
Do you think his supporters are going to look at him a little bit more negatively now? I mean, being that his supporters would probably take a lot of pride into what he said.
No, because, it's funny you ask that. I say no. I actually outright say no, because I just... because he does this all the time. Because it wasn't a big deal. Because of how he said it.
And you're saying it should be a big deal.
It should be a huge deal.
And you're saying
I think of all the misogynoir and racism, which he said in the same tone, like it's nothing. Like he didn't say anything. Like even when he was in that interview with Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper essentially called him a 5-year-old, it didn't really hit him that hard.
Yeah.
Because nothing does. He's Teflon,
But this should.
But I think this one should resonate with the denizens of America. And the fact that doesn't is scary.
Then why won't it? If this breaks over
because
a big
it hasn't. Order. Because it hasn't. And it will continue to not.
It's been pretty big on social media.
It's been big on Instagram, but also the other things that are big on Instagram are, pro-Bernie memes. It's like a liberal bastion of age under 30. So... yeah, you have to remember, just where I live in the city, even though New York City is the bluest state of them all, there are a lot of just over 35, over 40-year-olds that are, that are red, and that's fine. And I just, what frustrates me is that even the lawyer, Wall Street banker, journalist population of New York City can't seem to see that there's a problem with this. And, I was talking to my dad about it, who helped out on 9/11 and walked home. His office was across the street, and he's like, I was outraged. And I was like, well, that should be the national response, not just yours.
Got it.
So let's table this one, because I'm getting a little upset. But we'll stay on topic with presidential hopefuls. So Hillary Clinton won the big blue.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump won, first of all, and we all knew that was going to happen.
In New York.
Yeah, and he just has a lot of basing in New York, and just this is more anecdotal, but I'll use it as evidence. As someone who lives in New York, every Republican in New York City was a Trump fan. And I just, that's just the way it was. But back to the Democratic side, Clinton and Sanders... Hillary Clinton won by more than the nation expected, I think. I think she proved herself in that, it was both of their own states. They both had obvious big ties. And the fact that she won ultimately by this amount, which at one point was close, and the margin for error was, 5%. And, actually, do you want to pull up the numbers real quick? If you have that, sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah. I'm curious what they finally ended up. But I think she won upwards of 15%, right? We're going to double check that. But anyways, my question that I was, sitting on and that New York Times published a couple articles about was, she won by as much as I thought she did, was, is Sanders out? Does this mark the, is this loss?
Ooh, good question.
Mark the end of Bernie Sanders in terms of, is there a light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And
you predicted that Bernie was going to win New York.
I thought that Bernie would win by percentage, but not by delegates because of the margin error. So Hillary Clinton won 58% to 42%, and that ultimately led to, my math is bad, is that 23 delegate? Yeah, 33 delegate gap.
Yeah.
Which is not a lot.
In favor of Hillary.
In favor of Hillary.
Which is kind of, it's like kind of close.
It's close. Know. It's definitely close. And he snagged a lot of delegates. And it's not, I'm not asking is it over because of the big gap in delegates. I'm asking is it over because of momentum. I think the New York win. I knew this was gonna happen. New York's a weird state. It's not winner takes all. If it were, that'd be it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did think Bernie would win popular, but margin of error wise, would they share delegates? But does it mark the, he's trying to regroup now. We've got, Rhode Island coming up.
Yeah, one could argue that
Pennsylvania.
He's done. But there are some bigger states coming up. New Jersey's coming up, which is, I guess, a big deal. Pennsylvania's a big deal.
I mean, New Jersey's going to probably vote Clinton.
Hillary, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a big deal, actually. New Jersey has a big population.
Yeah. Realistically, it could... I think he's gonna put up a great fight. I happen to be a Bernie fan, but I think he's gonna stick through. It's not looking good now. I think New York was a big deal. I think that's a big swing.
Yeah.
I mean, a big turn.
I do. My point, I guess, was just to let you guys know that I don't think New York was a big swing in terms of numbers. I think that New York was a big swing in terms of forte.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. Sanders is going to fight till the end, and because that's what he stands for, and because it's beautiful, and that's my theory. My theory is he already won, and that he changed the fabric of American politics and tapped into a sure group of young supporters. But I don't know. Not looking pretty. I just don't.
It's looking Hillary Trump.
Yeah, it's looking Hillary Trump, which is scary. big money ultimately is going to win out. There's a great photo that surfaced amongst my Facebook friends yesterday of, I think it was a fundraiser, where it was Bill, Hillary, Donald, and I want to say Ivanka looking, I lose track of his wives, looking, smiley and in their, like, lavish gowns and at, like, your typical political fundraiser. And it's like flash forward now, big money still ultimately at the top, but yeah, we're going to see.
It sure has been a big fight though.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's changed the fabric of the election. And so, I think he's going to go in the history books, but we'll come back to that. Quick thing, $20 bill.
Oh yeah.
Change. do you want to take that over?
Sure, you saw what happened, right?
Yeah.
What they're gonna? Who are they? They're putting. There's a new $10 bill, I believe. No, it's also a $20. It's just a $20 bill.
Yeah, just a $20 bill.
So they're gonna be putting on Harriet Tubman.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the other person that they're putting on?
I don't know, actually. I just do you want to quickly?
I'll search it up. What do you think about that? I mean, I guess Andrew Jackson being on there is kind of surprising.
Yeah.
Just because of how, honestly, how wild his as he was as a president.
Well, right. But. He was. I mean, a lot of people like him for a good story, because he was our seventh president, right? And he was a crazy, loud, rambunctious fighter. Do I like this move? Yeah, I like this move.
Yeah,
I mean,
why not?
I mean, why not? I mean, there's nothing to dislike. It's a beautiful moment of American equality and in commerce. In a the irony is that it's a field that hasn't been that equal, where you know, people of color and women haven't been paid as much as the white man on the bill. So from that metric, of course I like it. And I think, of course, it
could easily mean that. That's
yeah,
big.
Yeah. I think that's the underlying message, Jackson, even if it's not. Because Jackson wasn't the greatest guy. And yep. I think that
he was also a slaveholder. I think he was a big one.
Yeah.
Big slaveholder.
Yep. And I think...
despite his political successes.
Yeah.
Brought that down. I mean, whatever. But like... Yeah, this is. I think this is important.
I think it's a good thing. I think there's nothing mal to say. I know people who are upset because, he's been on the bill for, forever.
Who cares?
For me, that one's a no-brainer.
Nothing greater than a $20 bill, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly.
Good cultural switch. Switch.
All right, last big question. Wow, we spent a lot of time talking. Last big question of the political section. So there have been a lot of articles published, not front pagers, but a lot of articles published about Russia, of recent making more oil movements in the north, in the Arctic.
Really?
And, subsidizing oil in the Middle East and upping their army. Actually, this made the front page of the New York Times the other day, which is... submarine warfare, which makes me a little nervous. I think in the presence in the Black Sea, and it's weird today. Yesterday in Globalization, and this is by random coincidence, we were discussing. We were talking about the Cold War, and this question comes up a lot. But with the election coming up, and Russia being out of the limelight. Compared to ISIS, do you think we're in a Cold War? Do you think it's over? Do you think, where does Russia stand right now for you?
It's
a hard one.
I would say no. I would just say no. It's not about them at the moment. I think it's just maybe, I don't know, it might be different in Russia because of their perspective, but for us, well, I mean, we didn't go through the Cold War, obviously. We were born years after, but right. there's obviously that feeling of fear towards the Russians. And I don't think we feel a fear towards the Russians getting more involved in our foreign activity. Because, we do have a role as just, like, the Unipol. Mm-hmm. We are the Unipol. To get involved with other countries and helping out and giving aid. And I know Russia has been getting more involved. I mean, maybe Russia's trying to butt in more, but I don't think we're in a Cold War. I don't think we have been either. Just because of that fear aspect that the United States lacks towards Russia. I just think we're the powerhouse and Russia maybe is just trying to, maybe their recent efforts are them trying to jump back in. I mean, they probably obviously are. I mean, who wouldn't want to be viewed as like one of the biggest entities in the world? I mean, they are probably one of the biggest ones. But we are in the West.
So is there a Cold War with China then? Because all our policies economically are reactionary to China.
I don't think we are either. And I think today, probably one of the bigger factors could be cyber. It could be more electronic because now you don't have to be
right, but
a big actor in international affairs. You could just be some hacker. You could just be an individual and you can have a huge impact. I don't think we are in a Cold War though with China either.
Interesting. My theory is that since 9/11, our kind of global focus has shifted a lot to preventing terrorism.
Yeah.
So the notion of a Cold War, actually, it was our substitute for a Cold War. Because in this weird gap between the Cold War and 9/11, there weren't as many advances in American military and American presence and American technology. And I think 9/11 marked a period where, we had a nice little substitute for the Cold War. But I was reading up yesterday, and every action we took in the Middle East, had an equal and opposite reaction by Russia. And every action we took, with NATO was an equal and opposite reaction because of...
Following Russia's actions?
Oh,
or?
Completely. Yeah. Like, in every case, in terms of, like, Western expansion, in terms of... talks with Ukraine. The biggest one is the Russia, Iran, U.S., Israel, let's call it polarization. And while the culture of, oh, they're this, you know, we should be scared of them, it's mutually assured destruction isn't there, I think that's a product of the 21st century and the nature of the 21st century.
Yeah, but I mean, we have a fear of ISIS and we have a fear
but
completely different.
But my thing is that our fear of ISIS is a people's fear of ISIS, but our reactions to Russia is a government thing, and what isn't that equally as valid for justifying, you know, a problem? Just because our people don't empathize, that's because 9/11 happened, but just because our people, you know, empathize more with the fight on versus ISIS and the fight versus, you know, Russia and the Kremlin, and I just think that it might not culturally exist, but I think it, in terms of legislation and policy, it totally does.
It's an interesting
and
idea.
There's a weird correlation, and it doesn't feel like we're in one. I agree with you, but I think it's there, and I think it's something that's going to be, you know, brought back into the fabric of IR.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, we're going to transition now towards some music. I've got a special listener. I know my grandma's probably listening right now, so I'm going to give a shout out to Nana Madge and Grandpa John, and I'm going to start off. I'm going to play some songs. I'll start off with one of their requests. I'm going to play some Creedence Clearwater Revival. So let's get it. That was Have You Ever Seen the Rain by Creedence. Classic. That was for you, Nana. I know. All right. And next song we're going to play is one of my favorite indie rock bands, pretty low key, but they've been around for a while. This band's called We Were Promised Jetpacks, which is probably one of the best names in band history. That's just great. That's so great. They're from Scotland. You're going to hear that in lyrics. So this is It's Thunder and It's Lightning. Mm-hmm.
guide you home before your curfew and into your bed. Standing on our tiptoes, peering through open windows, I swear I heard my name. With the lights off, waiting for my brain to storm, trying to work things out. It's thunder and it's lightning and it's all things too frightening. I could barely see outside.
Thunder and It's Lightning by We Were Promised Jetpacks. That's like the type of style of rock that I like. That's probably my ideal type of style. Just nice and slow in the beginning and then just explosions at the end. Really good. I mean, I'm a drummer, so I mean, I get really into that type of stuff. But this next song is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a little bit more vibey. This is actually a band from Ireland. I have cousins in Ireland, and this is a band. They are friends with my cousin. And I remember my cousin played them to me, and I was like, oh, these are really good. And she said, like, yeah, I'm just going to play my friends. And I thought the band name was My Friends, but it was actually Her Friends. And yeah, they got really popular. They made their debut album, I think, last year, or almost 2 years ago now, or a year and a half. And I don't know, it kind of sounds a mix of like Ed Sheeran, a little bit more alternative, more indie rock. So I'm going to play one of their songs that I like.
Got your head and your heart mixed up. There's nothing I can say, nothing I can do to prove you wrong. You've got your head and your heart mixed up. I think that I knew, I think that I've known all along. We had it coming, you knew 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 we did.
That was Your Fires by All the Luck in the World. Solid. Solid band. I'm so happy I got to discover them. They haven't really been doing or haven't made any more music recently. This album came out on New Year's Day a year and a half ago, just to clarify. But, I mean, I hope they blow up. It's really cool. It's my cousin's best friend. This next song is one of my personal favorites. I think it's one of the best covers of all time. This was done by Nirvana during MTV Unplugged, late in Kurt Cobain's career. But this is their rendition of David Bowie's The Man Who Sold the World. So I hope you enjoy. That was The Man Who Sold the World, covered by Nirvana, originally by David Bowie, done in a much different, very Kurt Cobain way. Actually, more vibrant, I would say, than his original stuff. That's why I find it so innovative. I'm a huge Kurt Cobain fan, so that song is pretty special for me. Just because it's so much different than his original stuff. And, I mean, it shows his versatility, I guess. He's not just... nothing really sounds like, just smells like Teen Spirit in theory. This next song is also by one of my more favorite bands. Like I talked about how I love how bands play some songs where it's nice and calm and then they just explode. Manchester Orchestra does exactly that. So this is I've Got Friends by by Manchester Orchestra. Andy Hull is the lead singer. He's just incredible. Some of this song will be nice and calm in the beginning and then explode. Enjoy.
Something bigger than
That was I've Got Friends by Manchester Orchestra. Lovely piece of work. I'm a huge Annie Hall fan. Annie Hall does a great job at expressing his inner problems with self-worth. And he really expresses his emotions in different ways. This, you'll never get the same Manchester Orchestra song in a row on an album. I mean, some of his more famous songs are just the completely opposite of that. That just happens to be one of my favorites. This next and final song is going to be one from my favorite band, which is Group Love. And this song is actually one of the songs that I think definitely changed my perspective of the band because, I mean, I've talked about this in the way beginning. They just seem like a very happy-go-lucky California surfing band, and that's not the case at all. And this song pretty much embodies that. If you don't listen closely enough, you could easily fall under that trap. But the song Raspberry has a lot of influence, Pixies and Nirvana to it, but it really does have a really nice vibe to it, and hope you guys enjoy. That was Raspberry by Group Love. That is one of my favorite songs by them. That concludes our music section. We have a couple more minutes. We're going to squeeze in something we haven't done before. We're going to talk about our favorite sport.
Footy.
Let's talk about some soccer.
Some soccer.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, all right. Let's just give the rundown really quick. I happen to be a huge Man United fan. Steven over here happens to be a huge Chelsea fan.
Let's go Chelsea FC.
This has been a huge, huge difference between us, a huge divide. But I think it can get interesting.
Together. Come on.
We're sticking through this. Yeah, but you have it much worse. I mean, he came into school with a Mourinho poster.
And he got
Mourinho
tanned.
Happens to be the head coach that got fired
mid-season. The former head coach.
They are now in like 10th
and
place.
I have not taken that poster down, and I refuse to take that poster down.
Which is ridiculous. But let's just talk about some things. First off, Leicester.
I
know we're late into the season. This is not a new subject, but what are your predictions for the end of the season? We have Leicester. This is unreal.
Yeah, the dark horse. You couldn't even call the dark horse. This doesn't make any sense.
They're in first place right now. Tottenham is getting close. 5 points behind, I believe. There's, I believe, 4 games left in the season. Leicester definitely has the harder 4 games than Tottenham. Who's winning this title? Is it going to be this crazy historic win? Or is it going to be Tottenham's huge, also unpredictable victory?
Right. Well, first, before I answer that question, I just want to say this. I'm going to say this really quickly. There will be, after this year, and there have been, a boatload of articles, trying to say, oh, Leicester won or Leicester did well after being one of the worst teams just avoiding relegation in the Premier League because of X or because of Y. I honestly can't. I don't know. Like, I don't think we're allowed to label why Leicester's players have gotten good and why, Mahrez and Vardy are the best at the cream of the crop and why Drinkwater and all these players.
Danny
never,
Drinkwater.
Oh, my God.
This is if you don't understand why people are so obsessed with soccer, this could definitely be
a great
example. This is just unbelievable.
It's an example of no money, no little history beating
Sanders winning every state.
Honest to goodness, that's actually exactly what it is. So back to predictions. I'm sorry, I'm getting really excited. We're going to see Tottenham, we're going to see Leicester.
Tottenham
Hotspur. They're fighting for the top. It's a 5-point divide currently, right? Mm-hmm. 70.
I don't know what the points are exactly.
I want to say 78, 72, but I'm not entirely sure. Regardless, Leicester has a really hard schedule coming up. They are playing Chelsea, I do believe. Okay, stop. Still a good team. Still a respectable team.
Well, so is Tottenham. Yeah. Tottenham's playing Chelsea as well.
Right. So, but Tottenham, for lack of a better term, actually both teams spanked Chelsea. So, all right, I personally think that Leicester is going to hold on. I think it's going to be great for soccer if they do. I think it's going to be great for viewership for the Barclays Premier League.
Of course.
But I honestly think that despite a shaky playing of the last week, Leicester is going to hold on.
I hope so too. But I can't help but imagine the worst happening.
Yeah.
Because same thing happened a few years ago to Liverpool in first place. Chelsea came in, slipped right under, for lack of a better term, no pun intended. Steven Gerrard slipped.
Right.
but Tottenham could easily do the same.
And
I believe Tottenham will do the same just because, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously real. Leicester's victories are real. I still feel like it might be too good to be true.
Yeah.
But anyway, another interesting topic could be Chelsea's in 10th. Man United is barely holding on. Just trying to squeeze in fourth place. They are in fifth right now, a solid fifth. What's the future of our teams? We used to be the powerhouses.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen?
One and two and three, yeah.
I'm going to give my theory.
Go.
Chelsea's fine. I'm giving that theory right now. I think next year, whether they buy their way to victory or not, I think they're going to do well next year. Man United, unfortunately, this might just be because I'm a Man United fan. I think we're falling in a bad place because you can adapt easier than Man United can. We came from a manager who is the manager since 86.
Right. Best manager ever.
Now we're falling under the trap of what Real Madrid and Chelsea do, which is get a new manager every few years, kind of cycle them out. And I think if Mourinho comes in, which all these rumors are really saying that's going to happen, Mourinho is going to start the Mourinho cycle, which is he just goes to clubs, he does a very good job for 2 to 3 years, and then leaves. And for you guys, unfortunately, he sucked. And then he left while you guys sucked. But
was it really Mourinho, though? It's a whole nother debate.
Yeah, I think
way.
We can go to a completely different debate, but it might have just been he probably made a way too lax environment, and then they just didn't take it seriously. But anyway, Mourinho, if he comes in, he's only going to stay for a few years. We're going to get a new manager every few years, which I'm scared about, and I think we might end up maybe getting third to fifth place all the time. I don't think... I mean, I remember when the season started, I thought Man United had an extremely good shot at title contention.
Man United was my pick.
I remember.
And Arsenal.
The first few weeks as well.
Do you remember that?
Look at us now. Look what's happening now. This might be the craziest Premier League year
Ever. Chelsea with the...
West Ham as well is up here. Like,
okay,
what is going on?
My thing with Chelsea is that they literally had the exact same team that won them the champion. Which is why it's weird. It is on paper the same team. All right, so quick predictions for that because we're kind of running out of time. My theory is that Chelsea is going to come back. I agree. Chelsea's not doomed. Though my advice is don't play the money game. I think the squad
you guys have
is
been
fine.
Doing that. You guys
let's,
have been
okay,
doing that.
Fine, but let's stick with what we have. We have the only purchases I'd say we need to make are defenders. Our defense is egregious.
Do you think you're going to hold on to Costa? I think you guys are going to get a new striker.
That's up in the air, but I think we need to focus our money on defenders, and our back four is old and quite frankly bad. And I used to be the biggest Ivanovic fan, but. He's trash. As for United, honestly, I don't know, and I do think they're going to fall into the money trap. I don't think it's a... I think the future for United is grim. I think Chelsea's going to have one of those things where it's going to be like one or two next year.
Steven, it's been a lot of fun talking to you and playing music. Likewise. Talking politics and, surprisingly, some soccer. This was Subjectively Objective. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks, guys.
Well, I thought about the army. Dad said, son, you're fucking high. And I thought, yeah, there's a first for everything. So I took my old man's advice. Three sad semesters. It was only 15 grand. Spinning bed, I thought about the army. I dropped out and joined a band instead. Size me.